Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour presents The Listening Room. My name is Crystal Starr. This show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Today's topic, education. As schools across the country prepare to reopen, so do the possibilities of what lies ahead. At the same time, for many students, parents, and faculty, returning to the classroom can present great challenges, especially as it relates to the coronavirus pandemic. As with everything else, traditional approaches to education are evolving. This week, we spoke with a student, a teacher, and a facilitator about what it looks like moving into the school year, how they remain flexible to new possibilities during the summer, and what gives them hope for the future of education. Our first guest is Camille Cooper. Camille is a second-year student at Sarah Lawrence College in Yonkers, New York. She returned home in the middle of the spring semester of her freshman year. She'll begin her second year completely online from home right here in Taos.
And then I talk into it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I say words.
You say words and you say things.
And stuff, and I use my hands, but they won't know because it's an audio thing. But I'll know and you'll know.
Hand and body language is essential.
It's kind of the only way I talk.
It reads through.
Cool. Nice. They'll know that I'm doing this.
They will.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm Camille Cooper. I am 18 years old, born and raised in Taos. I live in Ranchos. These are sort of things about me. Studying puppetry at Sarah Lawrence College. They, them, or she, her pronouns, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. So my first question is, what does being a student at Sarah Lawrence mean to you?
So Sarah Lawrence, I really am a huge fan of the community, and it was really definitely my dream school for a while. And being a student at Sarah Lawrence means it's a very collaborative community. And that's really what I appreciate about the school, is that it is, you learn not only from your professors, but also from your peers. And that's very much centered in the work that I get to do there. And that's really one of my driving kind of forces with going to that school, is that I really get to do a ton of collaborative work with my peers. And that's incredibly important to me, because it's great to learn from a professor who, you know, has quite a lot of experience and knows how to teach you. But also, I feel like some of the most vibrant work can come from collaborating with your peers and people who are on sort of more of the same playing field as you. And it's also a very like historically politically involved institution. Definitely great on the, it's a rich and vibrant community, and being a part of that is very important to me, because I feel not only like I'm just getting this degree, but also like I'm being enriched as an individual and as a human being.
What classes were you taking when quarantine started?
I was taking 5 classes, because the way that Sarah Lawrence works, if you're like a theater major, usually most students take 3 and each class is 5 credits. But I was taking 5, and 3 of my classes added up to one of the 5 credit pieces. So a third of my credits were theater courses. So I was taking a puppetry 1 course, a digital devising course, which was, yeah, a lot of like post-dramatic theater, digital art sort of work. I was taking a costuming 1, an anthropology of kinship class, and a literature class called Theater in the City, in which we read plays throughout history and also focus on the development and history of the city in which those plays were written.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great.
Wait, is that the anthropology?
Anthropology was one of kinship.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was about like, yeah, historically and different across different cultures, how people build families and connection. And then this literature class was the Theater in the City one, where I got to do all of this. It was a ton of reading and it was great.
Wow. That's really interesting, considering what quarantine did to communities.
Yeah, exactly.
And how we sort of adjusted how we entertain ourselves, how we maintain ourselves and our families within our communities. So that's interesting you were taking that course.
Right.
How did you manage quarantine, and what did you learn about yourself and your community during that time?
Yeah. So when I came back from New York, I did do the very strict like 2-week quarantine. But luckily, school was still happening, if not online. And really how I managed was just holding on to both the community of my school, even if it's through Zoom, like really focusing on the fact that I still have connection to all of these really vibrant, brilliant makers and artists who I could work with. And we did a lot of collaborative art, even across a big distance. So that made me feel very much like safe and comfortable in that regards, that I wasn't losing access to my school in that way. But then also at the same time, I was back here in Taos, which is, you know, the community that raised me and definitely forever will be my home. And I was able to, through digitally, while I was still just like staying home, connect with other people just in my community. And I'm very grateful that, you know, although COVID is like the big world flipping, very intense situation, that we are experiencing this now when we have the technology to still be able to see each other face to face, even across a distance. So I did a lot of Skyping with people.
Mm-hmm.
I did little build Skype calls with different friends where we would make art. I would be making a puppet, and they would also be doing the same thing. Like if we had classwork or even just like people in Taos who weren't involved in my school stuff, if they had a project they were working on, we'd Skype and then do that together. So
wow.
It has that sense of solidarity and community, and we're all doing the same thing, and also just like companionship and someone to talk to and ramble at.
As schools begin to reopen, does the thought of going back to college feel like picking up where you left off, or does it feel like an entirely new world?
It does feel like a bit of a detour. So kind of in between, yes and no to sort of each of those. So rather than it feeling like a total stop in a new direction, like, you know, I'm doing this totally different thing, or a continuation of what I was doing before, it feels almost just like a gentle detour. I'm going to end up in the same place. But it's doing the rest of my college work for this semester and maybe for the year online is going to be definitely very different than what I experienced last year. But I don't think that I'm necessarily missing out on anything. I just think that it is a new way of working, in a way that is necessary during times like these, and in a way that's the most responsible and ethical way to move forward. Because although I would love to be able to live on campus, it's just not feasible. And I'm honestly very proud of my school for making the decision to limit us to, or I don't even know if limit's the right word, to decide to provide us with online schooling, just because it feels like the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
just kind of personally and emotionally.
Yeah, they sort of took the initiative so you wouldn't have to worry about it, it seems.
Yeah, exactly.
To figure it out for you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
These are your options. And they did give us some options too, where if you wanted to be close to campus, doing online school, but still under very controlled circumstances, using facilities like the library or the workshop spaces, that you could if you felt like you wanted to move near campus, but then also giving students the freedom to decide not to do that and to stay wherever they are currently and still have access to their education. And I'm very grateful for that I still get to have that very enriching experience and still get to collaborate and work with people in the way that I was before, even if it is at a distance.
Right. Have you remained positive about the future of your education? And what are some things that you're hopeful about for the future of your education, even as it moves past to beginning a career?
Right. Yeah, I do definitely feel optimistic about it. I think I still feel very hopeful because I think that there's a silver lining to the situation with COVID right now, in that it allows me to have time to really hone in and concentrate on skills that I wouldn't have had time to perfect as much because of the kind of fast-paced nature of the life that I was living before COVID. And so, yeah, personally, I think that I could take this time to really establish who I am as an artist and really have that time to sort of soul search and do that deep introspection and have time to, you know, work on a project that I spend 4 months working on because I have time to spend 4 months on it,
mm-hmm.
and to really get into the finer details and the finer points of how I see myself as an artist and how I see my work. So I feel very hopeful, and I think that this period of time could honestly, in the long term, benefit my career and my creative spirit, and, you know, I'll have time to teach myself to juggle finally and stuff like that.
Are you working on a project right now that's not necessarily school related, but just on a personal level?
I'm brewing some things,
yeah.
in my brain. I just got my stilts shipped back to me.
Oh, cool.
And I have these really long crutches, and I'm thinking of building a kind of four-legged quadrupedal creature. I'm not exactly sure the specifics or what message I want to be sending with it, but I'm thinking of doing a processional style parade puppet to possibly be walking around the streets of Taos as
yes.
some sort of thing, which I would love to do. And I'm starting to have the time to be able to do that. And As we're kind of shifting into the fall, I'll have like more time to really settle in and, you know, dumpster dive and steal people's cardboard and turn it into a creature. So
that's fun. So what are you looking forward to most as it relates to continuing your education?
I think I'm really looking forward to discovering things, discovering new passions, discovering things I didn't know could be a part of my artistic practice and a part of my dreams and my goals. Just because I feel like I'm always finding a new little micro nuance of a thing that's how I want to do things. And so that's kind of also what I'm excited about with online school, because I'm deciding to not be part of the theater department this semester, at least, just because online theater was not exactly my favorite thing, because it's about the people and about
the interaction.
Yeah, exactly. The physical space, the bodies in the space. And so I'm actually thinking of possibly taking a 2D animation course, or taking things that I haven't, just turning over new leaves and kind of seeing the ways in which then I can incorporate them into theater and into puppetry in the way that I know I already enjoy, but gaining those new skills and seeing if I can kind of turn them on their head in that sort of way and add them to my own practice.
As it relates to your peers in Sarah Lawrence and back here in Taos, are they as optimistic as you seem to be right now about the future of their education?
I'd say overall, not as much. Some of my friends do feel similar to how I do, of this kind of like, okay, well, I think this will be fine. Like, my girlfriend is still also very optimistic, and both of us are kind of excited about new courses we can take. But a majority of my closest friends from Sarah Lawrence are actually taking time off, because they are very much adverse to the idea of doing online school, and it's really not the sort of education they want to be receiving, and they feel as if it's not going to be at the same quality as in person would be, which I disagree with, because it's still, you know, it's still the same professors and the same sort of pedagogy and the same vibrancy and the same community. But a lot of people who I know definitely feel very trepidatious about online school, because it is very difficult and it's a strange way to work. Like, how do I write a final paper for a class if I don't have access to a college library where I have all these resources and study rooms? Like, how do I build something for this scenic design class in my mom's kitchen? Like, stuff like that, where it does, there are certain, like, definitely some very strong restrictions that online school does create. And yeah, I think it is. I even debated, if I'm being honest, there was a moment where I was wondering if I wanted to take a semester off, just because I do want to make the most of the time that I have with my education. And I go to school on a scholarship, so there's only, you know, I can't just take extra semesters after a certain period of time. So what credits I take are the credits I get. But personally, I, you know, as I've said, like, I feel like it could be really enriching. But a lot of people that I know from Sarah Lawrence are taking time off because they don't think that it would be as enriching or exciting as I feel. And then some of my friends who are from New Mexico are definitely also feeling like very conflicted, because it's a lot of the time feels like being in between a rock and a hard place, where it's like, if I go to school, it's going to be very strange because I'm going to be online and there's going to be limitations. But if I don't, what else am I doing? And like, COVID's still going to be happening either way, and it's going to be difficult either way. So I decided to kind of, rather than take time off in fear of something, to push forward for something that, if it's not exactly what I want, then oh well. But I'd rather take the risk than
cop out.
Yeah, cop out, definitely.
No, that's very important and powerful, I think, that you're willing to take a risk. I mean, it's your life, it's your education, and you're the main one in charge of it. So
thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. And thank you for interviewing me. This is very exciting. And yeah, we'll see what the future holds.
That was Camille Cooper, a second-year college student sharing her bright and optimistic outlook on the upcoming school year. After the break, my co-producer, Chelsea Reedy, speaks with Scott Tennant and Catherine Horsey about the challenges education has faced prior to the pandemic and how the current times have accelerated efforts to address resources, outreach, and inclusion. Before the break, let's take a listen to Stars and Moon off the album Cliffside Woman, written and recorded by Siobhan Bonney, or Rurik, who records and makes music under the name Shore. The album, Cliffside Woman, was written and recorded across four continents using beautiful, naturally acoustic spaces, a handheld recording device, and a solar-powered recording studio in New Mexico. Stay with us.
Wish upon a star, I wanna be your highlight. Wish upon the moon, I wanna make you swoon. But no matter how much of the sky I wish upon you remain a mystery to me. I think of you by night, I think of you by day. We all wound up in my heart, it's there you stay. Oh,
Welcome back to The Listening Room. I'm Chelsea. In 2007, Catherine Horsey initiated Sustainable Places, Sustainable Organizations, and has since consulted with various nonprofits and foundations. Since 2017, she has been the coordinator for Taos School Zone. Here's our conversation about what it looks like when the community as a whole is involved in education and what it means in these times. So Taos School Zone is a collective impact project that coordinates the efforts of nonprofits, parents, and teachers to produce measurably better outcomes for our kids. What's a project or initiative that illustrates this concept of collective impact?
The Community Schools Initiative is a great example. We had been convening nonprofit organizations and doing teacher breakfasts, which turned out to be kind of listening sessions. And we asked them we all want to work with nonprofits. The nonprofits all want to work with the schools. It's like, well, what are the impediments to that? And when we looked at the list of impediments, we realized that one way of offsetting some of those impediments was community school strategy. And what that is an initiative where all the nonprofits bring their resources to the schools. And there is a community school site coordinator whose whole job, full-time job, is to coordinate the nonprofits and the work of the community in the schools. Everybody wants to help, but they don't know how to do it. So that's collective impact. And we believe that in Taos we have everything we need. We have all the money we need. We have all the people, the volunteers. We have all the nonprofit organizations, and we have awesome teachers. But we all need to be working together and not working in our individual silos, as people like to say these days.
Can you give I don't know if there's a way to give a concrete example of what it looks like when different aspects of the community are involved in education?
Well, here's a great example. And we're talking about here in these COVID times. And one example is Vista Grande High School, which is a charter high school. And a community school. They are working with the Taos Land Trust at the Rio Fernando Park, and they are growing food, the kids are, and then they take that food and they distribute it to the community. So that is an awesome way of working with a nonprofit, but also teaching kids empathy, I think, and giving them real connection to the community that they might not get just in a classroom. And we need more of those project-based learning opportunities for kids because, oh yeah, they're also learning how to grow stuff, but it's almost secondary, you know?
You've said that the whole community benefits from an educated citizenry. How do you convey to employers and nonprofits that education is vital to them too?
I think they know it, but they too don't know how to do anything about it. So part of the School Zone's Collective Impact Initiative is convening three sets of folks, early childhood people, K through 12 people, not necessarily just educators, but also post-secondary career folks. So in the post-secondary career group, we have employers. We have folks like the Taos Ski Valley, some manufacturing folks, and then the people like Taos Hive who are trying to figure out how to create opportunities for kids. Because a lot of employers say, oh, we can't find good people. Well, then what's the impediment to finding the good people? And how do we start working on that? And we can't wait until they're freshmen in high school to work on it. We need to work on it from the very beginning.
Well, going into this, into the beginning of the school year and, you know, the rest of the year during the pandemic, what does collective impact work in education look like now? Is that different or is that really the same?
I guess the principles are the same, but just the way you carry it out is going to be different and maybe better in some ways because we've gotten used to teaching to the test, and the test doesn't really measure the whole progress of the whole child because there's a lot of social and emotional learning that has to go on. And that commonly goes on in the schools in a group. And that's something that we're going to be missing if things continue online, you know, 100% of the time, because kids need to learn how to interact with other kids. But we haven't necessarily done the best possible job of teaching social and emotional learning principles to kids. And there's a group now in town that are working together to try and figure out how to do that.
In these circumstances.
In these circumstances and beyond. Because really, this is such an opportunity to change things. We know we haven't gotten the results we wanted in the schools. And that's because there are so many other things that affect kids' learning besides their math textbook. There are things like, well, if a kid comes to school hungry, if the kid comes to school scared or in pain, they're not going to be able to learn. So part of educating the whole child is dealing with those kinds of things. And that's why community schools are so awesome, because you bring those services to the schools where kids can take advantage of them, and where we hope that families will become increasingly comfortable with being in the school and getting services themselves there.
And how will that work in the pandemic when people, depending, might not be gathering at schools anymore?
There is some gathering that is about to go on. We had an online meeting of the community school site coordinator. So there are four community schools in Taos County. There is Peñasco Elementary. There is Taos International School, Vista Grande, and then Enos Garcia Elementary. And the folks in Peñasco have figured out, and they've got a pretty big physical plant, but they are going to be putting together groups of five kids at a time in each classroom. So all socially distant. And those kids will be the kids who really need the help. So kids who have maybe emotional issues, kids who maybe need a little more help with a particular subject to deal with that summer slide that is going to be a year-long slide, I think, before the end of this. And so they can bring in people like Taos Behavioral Health to meet with those five kids and help them on a, you know, small group basis. So we can do those things. And we know kids learn better in small groups than they do in, you know, groups of 30. So it's an opportunity to help those kids who really need it most. And when Peñasco said they were doing that, the other schools were thinking, maybe we could do that too.
A moment ago, you did mention the opportunity and the opportunity for change. And you just mentioned smaller class sizes or smaller sizes where people are meeting. What's another example? Is there one that you can think of?
I think that project-based learning is something we could take greater advantage of. When we talked a little bit about the Taos Land Trust and their partnership with Vista Grande, but you know, there are many different ways to learn math. And I don't know about you, but I hated math when I was in school. It wasn't until I became an adult and I became a scientist when I understood how you applied math. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is good. I can learn this. But previously, I think I would have characterized myself as not a math person. So when kids are learning how to draw angles, measure angles, they're learning math, but maybe it's in an art context. So projects like that teach the kids the things they need to know, but it's a different kind of format than doing multiplication tables.
And so are you saying that projects like that maybe are easier to carry out, or there's more potential for projects like that in these hybrid formats or online formats?
Yes, and I think schools need to recognize that like taking a nature walk with their parents or anybody is another form of learning. And the schools that recognize that and give credit, I think will see their kids progress faster.
That's really interesting. I hadn't considered that in terms of the potential or the opportunity, like you say, for this time to, in a way, make it easier to break out of the traditional ways of schooling in terms of 30 kids in a class, sit down, look at the board.
Yeah, even breakout groups in Zoom meetings or Canvas or whatever format you're using, if you can break the kids out into groups of five again, then they can help each other learn, and the teacher can monitor, can sort of go in and out of the rooms and monitor what's going on. But that's a great opportunity for the kids to learn and to sort of challenge each other. Because one of the things that we haven't done a really good job teaching is critical thinking. And we're kind of in dire straits in this country right this minute because we don't know how to think critically. Kids have got to learn that. And so these are opportunities for them to learn those kinds of skills.
Some of what Taos School Zone does is directly related to the arts and humanities. Is the role of arts and humanities in education changing during the pandemic, do you think?
It should change. And it can change, but we have to recognize the value of all of those different things. So not arts and humanities, certainly, but also nature, biology, those kinds of things. And again, this circumstance gives us the opportunity to incorporate the world into the classroom.
So earlier, this is an aside, but talking to Camille, she was also super optimistic about the future of her education.
Well, the thing is, many of us knew that things needed to change. And this is that opportunity to change things radically. And I think we've got to do it if we want a prepared and educated citizenry.
Well, how can we, individuals or nonprofits or businesses, support students right now?
When in our discussion this morning, we talked about the things that kids need, and I'm going to cheat and look at the list because it's in my notes from what we were talking about. But what kids need food right now. And so if you belong to a church or any sort of group that operates a food pantry, or you want to contribute to such an entity, maybe you don't want to go out in the world right this minute, that's a great opportunity. They need school supplies. They need internet access. And even though we've all done a lot of talking about, oh, everybody's got internet access, they don't. And so it's part of the equity we need to build into the educational system. We need to make sure everybody's got it and everybody knows how to use it. Because it doesn't do any good to give a kid a hotspot if their parents have no clue, you know? So
what are your thoughts on what's lost for students going into this hybrid or kind of online learning system?
The opportunity for them to spend time with their peers, because it's really hard. And parents are very nervous. I think the statistics locally and elsewhere say that at least 60 or 70% of parents are not comfortable with their kids going back to school right now. And, you know, you and I are sitting 6 feet apart because we're rightly not comfortable sitting right next to each other. So that's going to be a challenge, is making sure that kids get the social skills that enable them to share and feel empathy and those kinds of things that normally they would acquire in a classroom setting.
What's gained?
For all of us, the opportunity to look at education differently and to understand that education is a community issue and that the community should be involved in education one way or another. We should be supporting education if we want our kids to grow up happy and productive, then we need to get involved with it. I'm really happy that Taos is embracing that community school initiative, because it is a way for all of us to work together to create those better outcomes for kids. So I'm very optimistic about that.
Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing your thoughts with me. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it even more being invited. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Slowly, slowly.
Welcome back to The Listening Room. This song, Slowly, reflects Shore's love for exploring sound and spaces which already exist. The idea for the song came to her in a stairwell, which later became the location for this recording. Her inspiration? Hindsight, breath, seeing things from a different perspective, and having the wisdom to move slowly. In a moment, we'll hear Chelsea's conversation with Scott Tennant.
That's how we know that all has been forgiven, like the breeze knows.
Welcome back to The Listening Room. I'm Chelsea. Here's my conversation with Scott Tennant. After graduating from Hunter College, Scott joined AmeriCorps at the age of 33. Since then, after relocating to Taos, he taught briefly at Taos Middle School, and since 2008 has been teaching at Taos Charter School. In 2015, he received a master's in school counseling. You've been teaching for 18 years.
18 years.
Can you reflect on your teaching life and experience in relation to right now?
Oof. I guess I would have to say that I got into teaching in a non-traditional manner. And if we take that to its farthest extreme in today, this is a non-traditional style of teaching. I started teaching through AmeriCorps in Brooklyn in 2003, about a year and a half after 9/11, when there was a large service call for Americans to reinvest in their country. So part of that program is you don't go through the standard 18-month or two-year teaching program where you're in an experienced teacher's classroom for 5 days a week and you're learning from them. You're just kind of thrown in to a classroom with minimal experience and minimal teaching, and the idea is you're going to learn on the job while taking higher education credits. So that's how I started, and then here we are. The entire country shuts down in March as far as education is concerned. And there are many areas in the country that were already doing a lot of online learning and had introduced internet and distance learning models, or what they say are talking about now is blended learning, where you're at class sometimes and out of school other times. And that's and they're pretty successful. But for many teachers, the idea of having to teach, change, transfer all your curriculum into an online model and then have to navigate trying to get students' attention was pretty challenging. So I'd say that's the trajectory of my entire teaching career, it seems like.
How do you think some of your colleagues are faring this new reality?
There's a lot of, not to overuse the word, but there's a lot of isolation. On top of that, there's a larger degree of uncertainty, especially a lot of colleagues, most colleagues, including myself, having to make suddenly turn your home into a teaching center is a challenge. When you might have kids at home and they're all trying to use the same education center, but for different classes, and your spouse is at home and they have to work from home. So everybody's vying for the same space. It makes it pretty difficult to be equitable in your education and be professional if your house isn't set up that way. It's a lot to ask, but I don't know what other choice there is at the time. So I think it's pretty stressful.
You teach English, language arts, and social studies. Is that right?
Currently, yes.
Are your preparations, I'm assuming you're kind of in the middle of preparing, you know, for the year. Are there anything about your preparations in terms of those two subjects that is different based on going into these new modes of classroom?
Well, a lot of typically in my classroom, the students the lessons revolve around short introduction and explanation, and then exploratory classroom hands-on learning, working in groups, reading text together, building models, looking at maps, having a Socratic method style of discussion where you're face-to-face and you can see body language and understand. It's easier for the kids to understand when they can have all of those different senses involved. So when I'm planning for the upcoming year, I used a lot of internet-based sites as far as primary source documents or video, but just to use all of that sometimes defeat the purpose, because you can, if you're on the computer too long, you just start to zone out. And so you need to be able to break it up where the kids come back together and we talk about stuff, or they or we take a break outside and come back in, and then after they've digested a little bit about what they read or what they experienced, then we can go forward with a further part of the lesson and the experience. And that's going to be pretty challenging as far as the internet only model is concerned. We can assign, as teachers, we can assign things for the students to do after they get off the computer, assuming that they have the wherewithal or the space or the support at home to do another assignment that's not web-based. But that's hard to monitor. We have a few schools in the area that are internet-based only, where students get to learn at their own pace, and that's a really great model for many students who are motivated and have that self-pace. But for a lot of students who don't have that motivation or support, it's going to be pretty hard to keep them going for that. So that's when I'm thinking about preparing my lessons, I have to think about, how do I keep my kids engaged? And I can only give them a 15 to 30-minute chunk of time before they start to zone out. And that 30-minute chunk of time can't be all of me just talking at them or them just watching a video and then responding. That's not really very satisfactory education, where they get to have rebuttals and conversations back and forth. This is a new landscape, and how teachers, we've been talking since 2010, 2005. This is the 21st century. We have to get into a 21st century learning model. Taos is being pushed into this very quickly. And there's been some professional development in our community anticipating this on how teachers should use the 21st century learning model. But this is going to be trial by fire for sure. I'm writing the spring quarter off as just, hey, we survived this. We got through it. This is great. It was important for the students to all feel supported by their teachers and their school. And it's like, you're okay. Just get through this and you're going to graduate eighth grade. That's awesome. But now, if we're looking potentially at this is going to be the model for the next year, 2 years. So we have to really up our game and make sure that the students are involved and engaged. And I don't think we know how to do that yet. We have a lot of resources, but we're going to have to use those resources, and the resources being different internet apps, different web-based apps, different professional development courses we can take, and who knows which is going to be the best, which could be the best one to use or the best pair to use until we go through this. And there's going to be a lot of gaping holes. And I just hope that parents and teachers and students are flexible and take it with a grain of salt and just be patient.
What's something that maybe is gained or a positive aspect for students, would you say? And maybe that's a question for them.
That's a great question. I should make sure I save that for their journal writes that they do. We'll start in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. What's a positive experience for the students? I think there's several positive experiences for the students. A lot of them have been empowered to show that they actually have skills. That often at school, you know, we have a no phone policy. So let's just make it about tech right now. We have a no phone policy. Hey, put your phone away. Right now in the middle of class, you can't have your phone out. But this, largely because a lot of students didn't even have computers, they were having to use their phones. And then we were using different apps on their mobile devices, their phones, where they got to actually record themselves. And that was part of their assignment just engaging with their family. Hey, video your family. What are you guys doing? How are you getting through the day? I thought that was pretty empowering because they not only are the artist, but they're the director as well. They're the creator of their own media project every single time. I think that was a bonus. I think a lot of students were able to excel in these fun little video projects we did as part of their coursework, and then they got to upload them, and then the entire school community, or at least the school class, a lot of top educators and the PED and federal government are worried about social emotional EQ support for students because it's been stressful. But I think a flip side of that is a lot of students were able to stay home and really support their family in ways that they might not have been able to before, or they might have been expected to before. So I think it was probably a very positive experience, as well as it was isolating. It was very positive that I think a lot of family units became a lot stronger because they were together longer.
Do you think also the opposite was true?
Absolutely. I think it's a double-edged sword. I think kids were, you know, chewing their hands off just trying to get out the house. And I heard from several students like, my mom won't let me leave the house. I haven't left the house in a month and a half. Oh my God, what am I going to do? So they're bored and frustrated.
Yeah.
And they're socially isolated at a crucial time in their life where being together with your peer group and sharing experiences is a developmental necessity.
Right.
But I think the flip side, that the other reality was equally as true at the same time.
So I think when people become teachers, and correct me if I'm wrong, you study educational theory and pedagogical
language
approaches
and theory.
And,
yeah.
And then over time, you kind of take from that, but you, just based on your experience, over time, you develop your own methods.
Working with colleagues and trial and error approach.
So do you think that the methods and approaches that you've developed over time, do they still apply to this new circumstance, or are you having to kind of throw all that away?
I think the basic pedagogical approach and pedagogical learning that most of us have learned, whether we took our education classes in the early 2000s or the early 1980s or just now, the basic pedagogical approach is that do no harm to the students, right? Generally speaking, how can I best serve the students? So that doesn't necessarily get down to like what's the best assignment to give them or what's the best homework to give them. How can we support the student so they feel comfortable and they can learn? If they're supported, that means they're going to trust you. And if they trust you, they're going to be more engaged most likely. And if they're more engaged, then they're going to want to take ownership of their lessons. So I think that this era that we're in doesn't really matter. It still begs the question, how can we best support the student? And that's what we have to do.
How can the community support teachers right now as we go into the fall and the rest of this year?
By reaching out, if they have students in our class or in any class, reach out to a teacher once in a while and just say, hey, how's it going? I know the parents, if we're just talking about the community of parents out there, I know they're stressed out. And we as teachers going forward with this want to help the parents as much as possible. If it's reciprocal, I would like to hear from the community in my email, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
I'd like them to tell me some of the challenges they're having, even if it's griping a little bit. Some of the challenges you're having at home right now. Because if I can hear that, then maybe I can't fix that immediate challenge, but my colleagues and I can have a larger discussion about how it's going, because this is going to be a working model that's going to have to change over time. Right now, we think we have some pretty good ideas, but we know we have to keep it pretty flexible, because what we see right now on the drawing board is not going to be the same as it's actually when it rolls out in late August, early September.
Anything else on your mind these days that you want to share?
Apprehensive about how the school's going to start. I have to remind myself that I'm apprehensive every year school starts. So like, how's it going to start? Oh my God, it's coming up. As soon as you see the sunflowers start to pop up and explode, and you see sunflowers all up and down the highway and stuff, it's like, oh my God, it's school time. Go back to school. So I'm a little bit nervous how school's going to start, but I just want to do the best I can by my colleagues and the community, because this is so new, and I'm really I'm excited and scared at the same time, because I want to make sure that everybody has what they need. So that's all I can think about right now, the near future, not the far future. Far future would be great. I've been wanting to go to the beach for 3 years, and I think I have to wait on that for a little bit longer. So,
well, Scott, thanks so much for your time and sharing your thoughts with me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Scott Tennant talking with Chelsea Reedy. Today, we heard hopeful and optimistic outlooks. We also recognize the great challenges that educators and students face heading into the new school year. Let's do what we can to support them. We all know two things. One, education is at the cornerstone of every community. And two, we're in this together. Thank you all for tuning in. Share this broadcast with friends and family by going to tcataos.org and leave us your thoughts and comments. The Listening Room is brought to you in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor, and our local business partner, Taos Sunrise Builders. And thank you to KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetaosradio.com. This is Crystal Starr with the Taos Center for the Arts, and I'll see you next week. A situation slowly we see from there sweet can be open as how we that all has been forgiven, like the peace, no, no.